Thank you, Steve. It's 2:38 on WGN. This is John Williams, and you're listening to I'll Take You There, Mavis Staples, the Staples Singers. Isn't this a great song? Don't you love this? I'll stop talking. Greg Cott is in our studio, the rock critic for the Chicago Tribune, and the author of I'll Take You There, Mavis Staples, the Staples Singers, and the music that shaped the civil rights era. Hi, Greg. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, John. I'm really good. Appreciate the shout-out on the book.
Yeah, you know, I went through the book. I don't know that I read it cover to cover when it first came out, and then I've been reading it again. And I'm reminded once again, A, what a good writer you are. And B, what a great story this is. You know, I think a lot of us go, Mavis Staples, we're not rock critics. We don't really know that music that well. But as I said earlier on the show, if you just like a good story well told and you don't care what the story is, as long as it's a good story well told, then you would be hard-pressed to find one as good as this. Congratulations again on a great book.
Well, thank you. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. I mean, there was like three or four storylines in that book, and I appreciate you mentioning that because I thought, in addition to just being a biography of a great woman, a great singer, great entertainer for the last 60 years, this is also a story of the civil rights era. This is also a story of the African-American diaspora from the plantations in the South to northern cities for work. And this is a story about a person who is literally remaking herself in her 70s and making the music as strong as she's ever made in her career. So she's had three or four incarnations, if you will. And to do that once is an amazing feat. To do that three or four times as a woman of color in this country and in this music industry is a remarkable achievement.
And just one thing about that before we then bring in our other guest, and that is I also felt that I don't think I've ever been so in a studio as I was reading your book. Literally the nuances and the contributors that go into a song. You turn on the radio, you pop in a, you know, you open up a file, you listen to a song, and that's fine. But you don't think about the conversations people had about the drum or the bass line or the fuzz or the moans on a line of lyrics. And there you are kind of telling me about that.
Well, the song you just played, I'll Take You There, it's, you know, their most iconic song, the Staples Singers' classic hit from the 70s. And if you think about that song's like 4.5 minutes long on the radio when you hear it. It doesn't seem that long. But it's basically five lines of verse. It's five lines of verse. That's it. And what she does with those five lines over that 4.5 minutes is like it takes you there, takes you to some new place every time.
And you also tell the backstory of it, that the author of that song, although she would like to claim some credit for it, had lost a couple of brothers. They had been murdered. He was feeling a lot. This song maybe comes from that place. They bang it out in her condo on the lake in Chicago.
Right.
The neighbors downstairs disagree. And you said that in the studio, I didn't like that. You said that in the studio, in one take, she went a half an hour just singing and feeling and finding her way through that song.
Yeah, those recording sessions were really remarkable. The band she was recording with, her family was there, of course. They were always with her on every session. But Mavis was the lead vocalist, and the Muscle Shoals rhythm section was playing this music, and they were essentially improvising those few lines of verse and a handful of chords. And they were a great rhythm section. They worked with everybody from Wilson Pickett and Aretha Franklin to the Rolling Stones and Paul Simon. They all go back, what was your single greatest moment in the studio? And they say recording that song with Mavis Staples, because she was such a remarkable in-the-moment performer and gouting them on, like, little David, you know, give me some more bass here. Basically orchestrating the band on the fly.
Oh, that's David on the bass. Yeah. Literally talking to the band as
David
she's
Hood.
Doing.
Yeah, David Hood's playing the bass.
And that line makes
Little
the
David
cut.
Is David Hood. And Little David was Little David. Little David's about 5'7" inches tall, you know. So she was basically, you know, instructing the band, improvise here. Give me a little more of the bass.
But what is she talking about? What is that song saying? What is it doing?
It is a song about transcendence. Al Bell, the label manager, the guy who ran Stax Records at the time and claims he wrote the song all by himself, you know, he can lay claim to the fact that he planted the seed for the song. But the argument goes in the studio, and all the guys in the Muscle Shoals rhythm section say this as well, is there was really not a song there until we, and especially Mavis, got through with it. They turned that into a song and into a hit that it became and is still being played today.
Jennifer Lezak is in our studio. She is the program director of One Book, One Chicago at the Chicago Public Library. And she joins us again because I asked her to come by earlier. And then I said, no, wait, let's wait till Greg can get here. Please come back. And so you took a lunch break and did. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
So this is the book you want Chicago to read this year. Huh?
It is.
We can see why. What a great story. What a great storyteller. But there are other great stories out there. Why are you picking this one?
So with the One Book, One Chicago program, which is our citywide reading program at Chicago Public Library, we really try to choose a book every year from which we can draw a theme that Chicagoans can identify with, be inspired by, pushes them to think about something differently or more creatively. And we thought that this story is a wonderful story of a wonderful Chicagoan who's such an icon and legend and beloved here in the city, but also something that people identify with. A lot of people in the city have similar stories of coming up from the South, making their way through, you know, life with their family. It's a great story of family. And of course, what Mavis has become is such an inspiration to so many and something that we feel Chicagoans should be proud of. So we're happy to share her story and then sort of take that theme of music, the beat of our city, through our programming throughout the season.
I'll ask you this, but Greg, it's a question for you too. What's the, when people ask you about this book, since you're instrumental in introducing it to some of us, I mean, the book's been out a few years, folks know about it, but if you're going to take it under your wing, and I say, okay, tell me the story or anecdote from the book that you like. What's the thing where you go, oh yeah, it's this book about Mavis Staples, and like, then what do you say?
Oh, it just tells the story of this amazing family who decided to start singing on their living room floor and then became these icons of the civil rights movement and became the soundtrack that we all still know those songs. And when you hear those songs, they make you feel something about, you know, the history of our country and the present day, too. So I think it's just something we can identify with.
What do you say?
No, I'm beautiful. I appreciate that, Jenny. It's nice of you to say that. And, you know, I do think it is a relatable book. I was telling Jenny this story before we came on the air. There's been a number of book clubs in Chicago that have read the book, which has been a huge compliment. My wife's book club took it on right after it was published. And
well, of course they did.
Those ladies, but, you know, I was like, I wasn't sure if I wanted that to happen because they are rough on books, let me tell you. And when that book translated to them, and they were all genuinely enthused about it, they said, you know, it wasn't, I didn't really know much about Mavis, or I wasn't sure I wanted to read a music book.
Right.
But then I think what they realized, it's really a human history. It's really the story of the last 100 years, and especially focused on how the African-American community has blossomed in the last century. The diaspora coming to Chicago, the civil rights movement.
It's a story about a family, too.
Yeah, through the prism of that family. Yeah. Exactly. So I think that's the relatable part of it.
And you can't resist some of the names that pop up in there. Mick Jagger, Bob Dylan, of course, Prince. You know, so what was the timeline on this? Because didn't the Stones ask the Staples to open up for them, but they threw them just a pittance?
Right. Yeah,
right?
They wanted to pay the Staples $500 to open their arena tour in the early 70s.
So I don't know what the math is on dollars and cents these days, but that sounds like not enough money.
No. Even
if
by
I'm opening
today's
for
standards,
the Stones, $500?
Even by those standards.
A night for the family. And they're eight people, right? I mean, you got the family, you got the roadies, you got the musicians.
Yeah. No.
So they would make about $80 a night or whatever the math is on that.
Well, Pops Staples, who was a very astute man, you know, immediately looked at that like, you know, it was all about, it's the Rolling Stones. You're not going to turn them down.
And
he said, yes, I am. You're not paying me enough money.
I wonder if that was short-sighted. I don't think you drew this conclusion, but open up for the Stones for free, right? The NFL wants Super Bowl halftime singers to do it for nothing, but they know that you'll make money on the back end. I wonder if they should have taken that gig, or maybe they didn't need it. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, they ended up doing pretty well in the early 70s. They had a ton of hits. It was interesting you should say that, though, about opening for a band like that, because Bill Graham, the great promoter at the Fillmore out west and then also the Fillmore in New York, would have the Staples. He loved these multi-act bills, and he would have bands like the Staples Singers on with like somebody like Janis Joplin. You know, and at the time, it just seemed absurd. Why would you want to have a bill with Archie Shepp, the Mavis, the Staple Singers, and Janis Joplin, and he would make it work. And what he would say was the when the Staples would come out, and it'd be just the five of them up on stage, right? And the rockers would be all like, well, let's go get a hot dog or something, you know, let's go get a beer. And they would, the first notes would start to come out of their mouths, and they would all rush back to their seats like, wait a minute, what is this? It was this powerful sound that they could not escape. So it was a classic example of the audience not necessarily being there to see the Staple Singers, but once they left that arena that night, they were all big fans of the band.
How do you want us to interact with the book? Do you want us to download it? Do you want us to buy a copy, go to my library, check out a copy?
We would love you to check it out at your library. We have over 1,000 copies in all different branches across the city. Every one of the 80 branches of the Chicago Public Library has copies available. You can also check it out if you have your library card, log in and check it out to your Kindle or your other device, and check out the e-copy as well.
Hmm. Does those count as units sold then? How does that work, Greg?
Well, I think the goal here is, John, if they check the book out of the library and they love it, they're going to turn around and buy five copies for their holiday shopping list.
It is holiday shopping
yes,
season.
Exactly.
I have done that before, and I don't think that's such a bad idea. And then is there a deadline? Do we all have to have the book read by a certain date?
There will not be a pop quiz, no.
That's what citywide quiz.
We would love people to read it throughout the season. Our season goes through the end of April. There's book discussions happening at library branches across the city, and we also have a variety of music-related programming, from history lectures to walking tours to community concerts. We have a hip-hop librarian who's doing some poetry and rap. We have Old Town School of Folk Music doing some community concerts and some sing-alongs. So all of these are happening. We have over 100 programs happening at library branches across the city.
You're doing a reading or a musical performance yourself, sir?
Well, Jenny could probably address this, but we are doing a big event with Mavis in a week.
One week from today. Yeah. So Thursday, the 14th at the Chicago Public Library's Harold Washington Library Center downtown at 6 p.m. We will have Greg and Mavis in conversation on our stage, and we would love people to come. It is free. It's open to the public. No tickets.
Do you stay in touch with her?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Mavis is the kind of person you could call at any time and she would talk to you for an hour. You know, she may not even know who you are. But she'll still, she's like, I've always told people, she's like your best friend and mom and favorite aunt all wrapped up in one. She walks into a room, lights it up, tremendous charisma, tremendous warmth. I've interviewed countless musical performers, entertainers, whatever you want to call them, artists over decades of doing this job. She's the only one that remembers the names of both of my children and asks about them constantly. And my children write her letters and she writes them back. So that's the kind of person she is.
The cover of the book has a wonderful picture of her. There's the title. I'll take you there, Mavis Staples. And then there's a blurb from the Washington Post, an inspiration, a saga that takes us, like the song that inspired this book's name, to a place where ain't nobody crying. What a great line. The New York Times was equally effusive. And yet, and I just want to let you brag one more second about yourself, Greg, not that you asked to, but this is not your best-selling book. The Wilco book that you did outsold this.
So far, yes.
And the book that outsold both of those?
I did a book called A Survival Guide to Coaching Youth Basketball. and it's now in second edition. It came out originally in 2008. It's been the number one best-selling book on Amazon for youth coaching for the last 8 or 9 years. So that, trust me, that's been a huge surprise. But, you know, you get a twice-a-year royalty check, and then it becomes real. I go, okay, maybe I ought to do it more like this.
But you think every year there's a new batch of coaches and kids coming up to play basketball.
Yeah.
So you have an endless supply of people coming in to needing your book about basketball.
Exactly. There's a lot of parent volunteers who are coaching basketball. I was one a long time ago. I wish I had that book when I started out coaching my kids.
Yeah.
But it's for the Park District coach, for the grade school coach, and it's a way to, you know, give your kids some of the core fundamentals that they need to play the game the right way.
Jennifer, thanks for coming in. And
thanks
if we
so
can
much.
Do something maybe in the spring, let's do a pop quiz for our listeners who have read the book.
That would be great.
And we'll come up with some prizes and they'll call in and we'll ask not trivia questions, but questions about Mavis Staples in the book and give away some swell prizes. I think that would be fun.
That would be so fun. Maybe we'll get the commissioner of the library to come too.
I'm all for that. One book, one Chicago. It's I'll Take You There, Mavis Staples. Jennifer, thanks for coming in. Greg, nice to see you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.